Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Psalms chapter 10. I will entitle this psalm, Why Do You Hide Yourself? The title to the psalm is To the Choir Master of David. From that, we know that David was the author of Psalm number 10. He's been the author of Psalms number 2 through 10 so far. Now, the NIV marginal note says that Psalms 9 and 10 may have originally been one poem, an acrostic, each verse of the two psalms starting with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet. For those of you who are interested in the literary composition of the psalms, the Septuagint translation actually has Psalms 9 and 10 as one psalm. We start now in Psalms 10, verse 1. David says, Why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Well, I don't think there's a Christian alive who's been saved for more than 5 or 10 years or so that has not asked themselves this question, because there are all kinds of trouble in this life, and sometimes God doesn't answer as quickly as we want. I remember sometime around 2005, maybe to 2010, I had a bunch of bad stuff happen, and at first I said, well, you know, life has bad stuff. I'll get through it all right. And then it got worse and it got worse. And finally, one day I was thinking to myself, I said, I am living in a morally inverted universe. When I try to help people, they stab me in the back. They say bad things about me. I give money and I don't get blessed by that. I lose a ton more money. Everything's backwards. And then one day it hit me. I said, this is exactly what happened to Job. He wasn't doing anything wrong and all kind of bad things happened to him. I don't know why it took me so long to realize that. And I finally one day acknowledged to God as I was praying, God, I'm suffering. Please stop the suffering, please. Well, I didn't get an immediate answer, but eventually it stopped and everything got back on track again. And I started feeling like I was living in a normal universe. I remember thinking, I can't be suffering. I was in China for 23 years. I saw Christians there who really suffered in my little bit of problems compared to nothing compared to what they were going through. So I can't suffer because Americans can't suffer. Only Chinese Christians can suffer. No, that's not true. Any Christian can suffer. And if you'll read the book of Job, you'll realize in the middle of his afflictions, God wasn't answering him. And Job was constantly asking for a day in God's court. And God at the end says, no, Job, you shouldn't have done that at the very end of the book. But that's what he was doing. And so all Christians are going to have to go through a period where God doesn't show himself as quickly and as powerfully as we would like him to. Now, that doesn't mean that God doesn't care about you, that he's not watching the situation. It doesn't mean there's a limit to what Satan can do to you, just as in the case of Job. But we don't see it because God is hidden from us. David says, why do you hide yourself? Now, this hide yourself in English, when it's turned into Latin as the hidden God, the Latin is Deus Absconditus, and that term is used a lot in theology because this is a big, big theme in devotional, pious, and orthodox mystical writings. God goes dark for a while. As the NIV Study Bible puts it, our prayers may go unanswered year after year. We may wrestle continually with a problem and never find spiritual insight to explain it, or we may endure ongoing suffering with no relief in sight. Now, that's the honest-to-goodness truth. Now, sometimes the reasons that God doesn't answer are discernible. It's not because God is hidden. It's because we've done something to keep God from looking on our situation. For example, it could be sin in general. It could be disobedience. It could be hypocrisy, our hypocrisy. It could be our wrong motives. It could be our lack of faith. It could be marital problems. There's scriptures for all of these things, which I won't read to you, but there's plenty of things, plenty of reasons in the Bible why God might hide himself from us. But sometimes you're like Job. You haven't done anything wrong. Sometimes the reasons are impossible to determine in this life why God has hidden himself. Well, this is when faith comes in, folks, because faith is the essence of things not seen. And sometimes you don't see God, but you believe him anyway, even when things are going badly for you. Now, many Old Testament saints experienced this Deus Absconditus, the hidden God. How about Job? I've mentioned him already. How about Jeremiah? He's praying for God to please deliver Israel. And oh, he ends up in a pit and ends up dying in Egypt, with his country, Israel, totally burnt down to the ground. And how about Elijah as he wins that momentous battle with the prophets of Baal? Elijah ends up trembling at Mount Horeb in a cave somewhere, thinking that he's all alone in his love for Yahweh. There's nobody else in the world that loves Yahweh. Where are you, God? Of course, God wasn't in the whirlwind or the fire. He was in the still small voice. He was there, but Elijah couldn't see him. Even Jesus experienced this idea in his humanity of the hidden God. Remember on the cross, he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Well, actually, God hadn't actually abandoned him, but Jesus in his humanity felt like God had abandoned him. Jesus went through this so that in all things he could suffer as a human, so he could identify as a high priest with the people he was being a priestly mediator for, so he could identify with us as human beings. Now, David here is talking about, where are you, God? Why have you hidden yourself? But he didn't always think that God had hidden himself. In Psalms 139, verse 7, he says exactly the opposite. David says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? In other words, God has not only not hidden himself, God is actually everywhere with me all the time, revealing himself to wherever I go, he's there. So why the difference? Well, someone has suggested that perhaps it's because David was emotionally down when he wrote Psalm 10. And when you're emotionally down, you think that God has hidden himself from you. Well, the bottom line in all this is God is always with us, no matter how we feel. You might feel like God is hidden, but he's there, and he knows what's going on in your life. We go to now to Psalms 10, verses 2 through 7. David continues, in pride the wicked hotly pursue the afflicted. Let them be caught in the plots which they have devised. The NASB has the wicked pursue the afflicted, the KJV, the NAB, New American Bible, the Youngest Literal Translation, the American Standard Version, and the Bible in Basic English says the wicked pursue the poor. The idea of afflicted and poor goes together in the English translations all the time. Gill says that poverty and affliction, not just in the translation, but in the experience of it, they usually go together. A lot of times poor people are afflicted because they don't have power. Remember, money talks. The poor don't have money, so they can't speak, and so they end up being shunted aside a lot. And of course, in the Old Testament, as I'm going to read you some verses later on talking about how the Old Testament cares for the poor, especially because of this problem that they don't have power. So verse 2 says, in pride the wicked hotly pursue the afflicted. Then David says, let them be caught in the plots which they have devised. Let them be hoisted on their own petard. Let them fall in the hole which they have dug for others. Let them be caught in the nets which they have set for others. These are various expressions that David has used in the first set of Psalms here, Psalms 2 through 10. We've mentioned that already many times. And this is an imprecation. Let them be caught. He's praying that bad things happen to the wicked. There's nothing wrong with praying for justice to come on evil people, folks. There's a lot of Christians, a lot of wussy-pussy evangelicals. Oh, now Jesus is a God of love. You should never pray that way. That's in the Old Testament, not in the New Testament. Nonsense. There's nothing wrong with evil getting caught. In fact, David is complaining because the evil are not getting caught. God is hidden. He says in verse 3, for the wicked boast of his heart's desire, and the greedy man curses and spurns the Lord. You can get on the internet and find evil people just saying the most blasphemous things you want. Of course, now, would YouTube censor that? Well, of course not. They'll censor people who are saying that, hey, maybe that vaccination has some side effects that haven't been caught yet for the COVID virus. Oh, shut him off. Misinformation. But you can blaspheme God all you want on YouTube, and they don't say a thing about it. The greedy man curses and spurns the Lord. Verse 4, the wicked in the haughtiness of his countenance does not seek him. All his thoughts are, there is no God. Now, verse 4 is interesting to me. It's referring to atheists. All his thoughts are, there is no God. We often say that atheists are stupid. From that verse, the fool in his heart says there is no God. So that proves that atheists are stupid. And I've always thought atheists were stupid. I've got no problem with that. But here, this is a verse that's never quoted. At least I've never heard it. This verse shows that atheists are not only stupid, they're evil. The wicked, the evil in the haughtiness of his countenance does not seek him, all his thoughts are. There is no God. He's an atheist, and he's wicked, he's evil. So atheism is not just another philosophy, another stupid philosophy. Atheism is immoral in addition to being stupid. Verse 5, his ways, that's referring to the wicked, his ways prosper at all times. In other words, he's riding high and mighty. Remember in the book of Job, Job kept saying, sometimes the wicked do prosper, but you false friends keep telling me that the wicked are always punished. Well, no, they are not always punished. They ultimately are punished, and David's going to point that out here in a minute. But in the course of their life, sometimes they're riding high and mighty. His ways prosper at all times, David says. Your judgments are on high, out of his sights. In other words, God, you could stop this nonsense, but you're so high up in the heaven, it's like you're not watching. You're not looking at all the evil down here. It's, you are out of the wicked person's sight. David continues in verse 5, as for all his adversaries, the adversaries of the wicked snorts at them. He's not worried. He has no enemies that concern him. Verse 6, he says to himself, I will not be moved. Nothing's going to get me, the wicked says. Then he says at the end of verse 6, throughout all generations, I will not be in adversity. Not only am I sitting pretty now, but even all the way up into the future, nothing bad's going to happen to me, which is absurd. It's amazing how evil people think that they will never die. They never think that one day they're going to die. I mean, I don't see how they can deny it. I mean, everybody knows that, but they just pretend like it's not going to happen, and they go right on with their evil. Reminds me of a gangster movie I saw one time. It was a true story about a hitman for the mafia. It chronicled his life. He tried to live an ordinary family life, had a wife and daughters. He lived a leave-it-to-beaver existence in the suburbs, but then he would go out at night and do his job and bump off people, and he would throw his guns into the river, and the movie showed him throwing about 100 guns into the river. And he got older and older, and he lived a dangerous life. He was in the mob, and nobody ever assassinated him. He got older, ended up living in a assisted living home. He got older and weaker, but he never repented for killing all those people. And I remember thinking to myself, well, doesn't this guy realize he's going to die? Well, most evil people don't think there's a judgment coming after they die, and that's why they just keep right on. This psalm reflects the typical idea of evil people, and David has expressed it well. Verse 7, David continues, that's referring to wicked people, his mouth is full of curses and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue is mischief and wickedness. Well, that could be that his mouth is full of curses towards God, and I'm sure that's what David was referring to, but it's also true that wicked people curse afflicted people, poor people. They get cursed all the time. Now, this is a big deal. The NIV Study Bible says people of the ancient world believed words had power for affirming people or hurting them. Ah, sounds like Kenneth Copeland. They took oaths as seriously as people today take legal contracts. Now, oaths, the NIV Study Bible is referring to curses there. So, yes, curses were very, very serious. Thomas Aquinas always talked about the evil eye coming on people, and he was talking seriously. He wouldn't. Taking it as some kind of a myth. Today, people say, well, it's no big deal. It reminds me when I was in college, there was this college student that we knew, a fellow student who had a younger sister in junior high school. And that young lady, she was 15 years old, and she was talking about a friend of hers who had voodoo dolls and was cursing people, sticking needles in the doll and cursing people, and bad things were happening. Well, I didn't take that lightly. That's serious business. What you're doing when you do that, you're calling demons to go and do their dirty work on some innocent person. So even in the modern age, people don't like to get cursed. Well, what should our attitude be toward those who curse us? Should we believe that something evil will soon come upon us? No, we should not be afraid of curses of evil people. Well, here's some reasons why. Well, first of all, the people who are cursing might just be talking. They might not have an occult connection with demonic powers. They're just arrogant idiots, in which case their stupid curse words are not going to hurt you. If you don't let them hurt you, they won't hurt you. But some people do have occult connections with demonic powers, people that are into voodoo and so forth. But hey, what can a demon's power compare with the power of Christ? Jesus lives in the believer. The devil is supposed to be afraid of us. We're not supposed to be afraid of him. So you stand on who you are. You say, demon, get the Hades out of here, leave me alone, you have to leave. I remember in China that was always a problem. These young Christians are scared to death of demons because demons are everywhere in China because they have all this ancient Buddhism and nativist-type religions. And so you have to tell them, take authority over the demon and cast it out. That's what they did in the New Testament. You can do it today too. Now, there's an interesting proverb that says that nothing evil will come upon us when somebody curses us. Proverbs 26:2, reading from the King James Version, as the bird by wandering, as the swallow by flying, so the curse causeless shall not come. The causeless curse, in other words, a curse that's going to cause absolutely nothing. The curse ain't going to do anything to you. The King James is a little bit obscure. Let me read Proverbs 26:2 from the New Living Translation. Like a fluttering sparrow or a darting swallow, An undeserved curse will not land on its intended victim. You ever seen a bird land on you? No, they don't. They flutter and they dart and they fly, but they don't come near you. Likewise, if somebody tries to curse you, they don't have a chance to land that curse on you. We need to remember that. We go now to Psalms 10, verses 8 through 15. He, referring to the evil man, he sits in the lurking places of the villages. In the hiding places, he kills the innocent. So we see the wickedness of this man is very wicked. He's a murderer. His eyes stealthily watch for the unfortunate. The KJV has the poor here. Verses 8 and 9, we have unfortunate and afflicted. That word is translated as poor sometimes. Sometimes afflicted, different translations. His eyes stealthily watch for the unfortunate. He lurks in a hiding place as a lion in his lair. He lurks to catch the afflicted. He catches the afflicted when he draws him into his net. He crouches. He bows down, and the unfortunate fall by his mighty ones. In other words, the poor man is caught by the mighty ones of the wicked man, his henchmen, in other words. The wicked man says to himself, God has forgotten. He has hidden his face. He will never see it. Here's some other psalms that reflect this idea that the wicked think that God's not going to get them for that. God's not going to get them for the things they're doing. Psalms 94:7. They have said, the Lord does not see, nor does the God of Jacob pay heed. He's not watching me. I can do what I want. Psalms 59:7. Behold, they belch forth with their mouth. Swords are in their lips, for they say, who hears? God's not hearing all my curses and blasphemies. It reminds me of an old country song years ago. God's going to get you for that. Now, of course, as a Christian, I don't like that song because that's not the way our relationship with God works anymore. He's like a loving father to us. God's not going around looking for things to whack us over the head with. However, if you're referring to non-believers, oh yes, God's going to get you for that. And don't think that God doesn't see. Verse 12, David continues, arise, O Lord, O God, lift up your hand. Do not forget the afflicted. Again, this is what makes people think that God is hidden, because it seems that there's so much affliction and oppression in the world. People say, where are you, God? Well, we don't live in heaven yet. There's not going to be any affliction and oppression in the final state, heaven. But down here on earth, there's going to be, and it will be here until the day the earth is relieved from its affliction and bondage to sin. Interestingly enough here, God is not only hidden from the oppressed who's being oppressed, but God is also hidden from the oppressor. The oppressor, the wicked man, says, oh, God's not up there. I don't see him. And then the person whom he is oppressing says, God's not up there. I don't see him. Same thing. It's a terrible thing to live in a world where there's no God, folks. That's why even today, 81%, according to the latest Pew poll, I think it was, might have been Gallup, 81% of the people believe in God, some sort of God. Now, that's the lowest in the history of the nation, is unbelief is running through this country. But even still, atheism has always been a minority philosophical and religious position, because people don't like the thought of living in a universe without God. They're not made that way. Eternity has been set in our hearts, as Solomon said in Ecclesiastes. So David continues in verse 13, why has the wicked spurned God? He, the wicked, has said to himself, you will not require it. In other words, you're not going to judge my sin. Verse 14, David says, you have seen it, for you have beheld mischief and vexation to take it into your hand. In other words, David is saying, no, the wicked are wrong. God is not going to hide himself forever. God, you see the mischief, and you're going to take it in your hand. You're going to wreak justice on evil people. The unfortunate commits himself to you, David continues. You have been the helper of the orphan. So David is not willing to say that God hides himself completely forever. God eventually is going to help the poor, the afflicted, the orphan. Then David says in verse 15, break the arm of the wicked and the evildoer. Ooh, an imprecatory psalm. Not going to talk about that anymore. I've talked about that plenty in chapter 1 of Psalms. Break the arm of the wicked. There is nothing wrong with praying evil for punishment, not for personal revenge now, but for punishment of evil. What you're doing is you're praying that God will execute his justice, and God is a God of justice. He likes holiness. He likes to judge evil. So when David says, break the arm of the wicked and the evildoer, he is praying God's will. Now, I know there's a lot of namby-pamby, wussy-pussy, Rob Bell evangelicals that think it's terrible to talk about God judging evil. I bet they'll change their mind when the robber comes through the door pointing a 45 at him. Reminds me of Dietrich Bonhoeffer in Germany, pre-World War II, big pacifist, big liberal theologian. His theology was always bad. Well, he watched evil up close. He's got to see Adolf Hitler in operation, and he finally decided he was going to try to assassinate that son of a gun. And I applaud him for it. Unfortunately, the assassination plot failed, and Bonhoeffer got executed. But his heart was in the right place when he tried to assassinate Hitler. He had undergone a transformation from being a wussy-pussy, neo-orthodox, liberal, whatever he was, pacifist, to somebody who realized that evil has got to be taken care of, or the afflicted and the oppressed will be wiped out. So David says in verse 15, "Break the arm of the wicked and the evildoer, seek out his wickedness until you find none." In other words, until there's no more wickedness to judge anymore, because God's wiped it all out. Until you find none, until God looks down and says, "Well, I've judged this wicked, I've judged that wicked, I've exterminated this evil person, I've eradicated the evil there. Well, there's nothing more to do. All the wickedness is gone." That's what David's praying for. Of course, it's not perfectly going to happen until God destroys evil completely when Jesus returns his second time. Now, the idea that God will utterly destroy the wicked and its deeds is recorded in some other psalms. In our previous psalm, Psalms 9, verses 5 through 6, David says this, "You have rebuked the nations, God. You have destroyed the wicked. You have blotted out their name forever and ever. The enemy has come to an end in perpetual ruins, and you have uprooted the cities. The very memory of them has perished." Praise the Lord. Psalms 34:16, "The face of the Lord is against evildoers, to cut off the memory of them from the earth." Psalms 37, verse 36, this is one of my favorite psalms. "Then he passed, the wicked man passed away, and lo, he was no more. I sought for him, but he could not be found." The reason I like that verse is because I pray about that concerning certain evil politicians and cultural icons in our country, the America, entertainment icons, sports figures, the evil people in the media, the corporations, the government, the schools, everywhere. We are inundated with filth. And so that's why these psalms are so encouraging. Pretty soon, we're going to look around and guess what? There's not going to be any more woke jokes trying to shake their puny little fist up at the Almighty God who, male and female, he created them in the image of God. We go now to Psalms 10, verses 16 through 18. David continues, "The Lord is king forever and ever. Nations have perished from his land." Well, his land would be Israel. The nations that have perished would be the seven original Canaanite nations, as Adam Clark says. He actually says this may refer to the Canaanites. I think it's pretty clear to me, at least, that it was referring to the Canaanites. After all, the Canaanites were pretty much destroyed by the time of David. So he says, hey, all those Canaanite nations are gone. Verse 17, David says, "O Lord, you have heard the desire of the humble. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear." You're not going to be hidden anymore. You're going to listen. And you're going to come down. You're going to strengthen the heart of people who are being oppressed by evil people, humble people. You're going to give them the desire of their heart, which is deliverance. Verse 18, well, the end of verse 17 says, "You will incline your ear." Verse 18, "To vindicate the orphan and the oppressed." The NIV says, "To defend the orphan and the oppressed." The KJV says, "To judge the orphan and the oppressed." In other words, to give them a positive judgment. "So that man who is of the earth will no longer cause terror." So God's going to be there eventually. Notice how David always ends up his psalms on a positive note. He complains a little bit in the first part of the psalm, then the end of the psalm, positive. The last two psalms, we've seen that. Now, there were plenty of scriptures that say that the Israelites were supposed to vindicate the orphan and the oppressed. Let's list some of them. Deuteronomy 15, 7 through 11. "If there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers in any of your towns in your land, which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart, nor close your hand from your poor brother, but you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his need and whatever he lacks. Beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying, 'The seventh year, the year of remission, is near, and your eye is hostile towards your poor brother, and you give him nothing. Then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be a sin in you. You shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him. Because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land. And I might say here, sometimes that verse, which was repeated in the New Testament somewhere, for the poor will never cease to be with you, the poor are always with you, that sometimes can be misused. People say, well, the poor is always going to be with us, therefore there's nothing I can do about it, so I'm not going to give any money to them. That's not what the verse says. It says, because the poor shall never cease, you shall freely open your hand to him. We go to Proverbs 14:31. He who oppresses the poor taunts his maker, but he who is gracious to the needy honors him. You want to honor God? Give to the poor. Proverbs 19:17, one who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his good deed. Give to the poor. There's a man I know right now working in one of the poorest nations of the world, some of the poorest nations of the world, Sierra Leone and some other areas in West Africa, and he sends back the pictures, and I'm telling you, poverty is a terrible thing, a terrible thing. And right now, as the war in Ukraine, I'm speaking on July the 8th, 2022, this idiot, this evil person, Putin, has attacked Ukraine, and a lot of grain comes from Ukraine that was feeding Africa. And now there's problems in Sri Lanka, which is in India, but there's also problems in Africa, and I understand that the people there in Sierra Leone that my friend is ministering to are even going to have more poverty. You have to believe in God, I'm telling you, in stuff like that. And the thing that these poor people go through is just like the Christians in China, what they go through. It's awful. And the scriptures are very, very clear. We're supposed to care about people like this. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with Psalm chapter 10. We're now prepared to go to Psalms chapter 11, verses 1 through 7, which I will entitle, The Lord is in His Holy Temple. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.